themselves. As Thomas watched the monitors, he decided he was okay, satisfied with the status quo until something better presented itself.
"What's going on over there?"
Teresa asked, snapping Thomas out of his thoughts. She pointed at one of the monitors on the right. Thomas threw it onto the large central display to get a better look. A group of boys, led by Albie and Newt, were standing suspiciously around a lean-to of lumber scraps against the stone wall near the northwest corner of the glade. Wicked had started the boys off with a small, simple structure for them to take shelter, with hopes that the subjects would add to it as supplies were sent in, take some initiative, and better their living conditions. They'd already started messing around with the idea the last couple of weeks, and they'd collected all the spare wood they had and leaned it against the wall. Some boys had even slept under there the last few nights. But now the group standing at its opening nearest the corner of the walls looked troubled. They stood oddly, for one thing, too close together, as if they didn't want the beetle blades to catch a view of what was inside the lean-to. Their heads twisted this way and that, scanning the area around them like criminals waiting for a getaway car. Albie and Newt whispered furiously to each other, either arguing or mutually worried about something.
"What are they up to?"
Thomas said quietly, leaning forward to see if he could make out anything in the shadows. Nothing from that angle. Teresa beat him to the punch by pushing a communications button that linked them to the command room, where the important people worked.
"Any way we can get a beetle blade in there?"
Teresa asked whoever was listening.
"Nope," replied a man.
One of the psychs, probably. They didn't interact with the subjects much, if ever, even with Thomas and Teresa.
"We want to see this play out before we let them know we're watching closely."
That made Thomas even more intrigued.
"Can't we at least zoom in from where it's at right now?"
"We'll do our best," the man replied curtly. "Command room out."
There was a loud click that he obviously made audible on purpose. In other words, "Leave us alone." They got that way sometimes. Movement on the display stole Thomas's attention. Albie had leaned into the triangular shelter and was struggling with something, his body tense with exertion. Newt joined the effort, and then they were dragging something out of the darkness and into the gray light. The false sun had already been eclipsed by the huge wall on the west side and thrown that area of the glade into shadow.
"What?"
Teresa said.
"What is that?" "It's a person,"
Chuck yelled, making Thomas jump a full inch above his seat. But the kid was right. Albie and Newt both held on to one leg each, dragging a person to the junction of the north and west walls. When they got there, Albie knelt next to the boy and punched him in the face. Teresa yelped in shock, and Thomas scooted a couple of feet backward without thinking. Albie reared back and punched the boy again. Then again. Newt grabbed him by the arm and pulled him away.
"Can you tell who it is?"
Teresa asked. Chuck had walked around the control deck so that his eyes were only a few inches from the screen.
"I know him," he said. "That's George."
"The one who welcomed Zart into the glade?" Thomas asked. "That was barely over 24 hours ago. How could everything have gone wrong since then?"
"What went wrong?"
Teresa added.
"I mean, what in the world's going on? Why is Albie trying to beat the hell out of George?"
Thomas noticed one of the camera views on the left side of the main display blur into motion, the beetle blade scuttling as fast as it could through the growth of vines.
"Chuck, get back over here," Thomas snapped. "I can't see all the views."
Chuck obeyed, the look on his face somewhere between fear and glee. Thomas quickly grabbed the screen he wanted and swiped it onto the main display in the center. Just as it settled there, the camera angle popped out of the vines and showed a bird's-eye view of Albie, Newt, and George. Despite the noise the beetle blade must have made in its hurry, none of the boys seemed to notice. Now Thomas could see everything in perfect detail, and could hear their every breath and movement. George was a mess. He squirmed on the ground, his muscles clenched as if they'd been permanently locked that way, cramped and tight. His eyes bulged, his lips pressed together into a pale line. The skin of his face looked as if it had been ripped off, boiled, then stapled back on. Thomas blinked, rubbed his eyes. George appeared almost animated, a product of studio special effects. As he writhed as if going through the worst pain imaginable, he let out sharp moans through his closed mouth that sounded rabid.
"What the bloody hell is wrong with him?"
Newt shouted. Another kid stood by him now, someone Thomas didn't know. That boy said,
"I told you guys, we were out exploring the maze. He was always ahead of me. I heard all these mechanical sounds, and then Georgie screamed. I could barely get him back here."
He looked angry, seething as he spoke.
"Who's that?" Thomas asked.
He almost felt like he was there in the glade with his old friends.
"His name's Nick," Chuck replied. "Picks his nose."
Thomas tore his eyes away from the display to look at the kid.
"Seriously? Now? That's all I know about him." "I didn't want the others to see him,"
Albie said, bringing Thomas's attention back to the large screen.
"Get everybody spooked. Fat chance of avoiding that now."
"Well, why were you just hitting him in the face?"
the boy named Nick asked, still hopping mad.
"He's my friend, you know. He needs medical help, not some hothead beating on him." "He was trying to freaking bite me,"
Albie yelled in Nick's face.
"Back off!"
"Boys, slim it,"
Newt said, stepping in between them.
"Let's figure this out. What do we do?"
They stood over George, who'd gotten worse. His head actually looked like it might explode from the swelling. He was beet red and puffy. Veins bulged along his forehead and temples, and his eyes, they were enormous. Thomas had never seen anything like it.
"Did you see what attacked him?"
Albie asked Nick, seeming to have forgotten that a few seconds ago they were on the verge of a fight. Nick shook his head.
"Saw nothing."
"Did George say anything?"
Newt asked. Nick nodded.
"Well, yeah, I think so. Not sure, but I think he kept whispering. It stung me, it stung me, it stung me. It was weird, man. He sounded like he was possessed or something. What are we gonna do?"
Thomas slumped back in his chair. For some reason, those words really chilled him. "It stung me." Chapter 39 2:30.3.15 5:01 p.m.
"Come on,"
Albie said, leaning down to grab George's legs.
"No use trying to hide this anymore. Let's get him out to the middle of the glade and gather everybody. See if anyone knows what to do."
At that exact moment, Newt looked up, straight into the camera. Thomas leaned back, for a second thinking his friend had somehow spotted him. Newt cupped his hands around his mouth and shouted,
"Hey! Whoever sent us here! Send us some medicine! How about a bloody doctor? Better yet, why don't you take us out of this hellhole?"
Thomas went cold. It was crazy that Newt and the others really didn't know who'd sent them there, or even that something called Wicked existed. All they knew was this strange life they now lived at the center of a maze, and that there were cameras on the tips of robot insects running around the place. Only now, it looked like they were going to know all too well about the Grievers also.
"It stung me."
No one had mentioned anything to Thomas about being stung. It had to have something to do with one of those metal appendages that extended from the creature's bodies. The boys had picked George up. It took four of them because he was thrashing so hard. And the sounds he was making, moans so haunting. Thomas wanted to cover his ears. The group rounded the small structure they'd started calling the homestead and headed for the center area of the glade near the opening to the box. Other boys, some working in the gardens, some in the farm animal area, others just milling about, noticed the situation immediately, and soon the other gladers were gathered around George, who was half-placed, half-dropped on the ground by his very frustrated bearers. Because they'd been noticed anyway, Wicked had dropped any pretense of not observing and swarmed in with the beetle blades. Various angles of the scene flashed up on the monitors in the room, and Thomas chose the best one, wishing he still had an overhead view, and put the display front and center.
"Listen up!" Nick yelled.
Thomas was a little surprised that Albie hadn't taken charge.
"Georgie and I were out in the maze, running the corridors, and he got up ahead of me. Something attacked him. He keeps saying he got stung. Anybody know anything about this?"
"Minho's seen some kind of creature out there," Albie said.
"Where's Minho?"
"Still running,"
someone answered.
"Probably taking a nap in one of the dead ends."
"He was one of those creatures he talked about, though," Albie said. "Had to be."
"It doesn't really matter what it was."
Nick pointed down at George, who was curled into a tight ball, rocking back and forth on his side.
"What are we going to do with him? All we have is a bunch of aspirin and bandages."
"There was something weird in the cooking supplies they set up last week."
Thomas hadn't seen who'd spoken, but then a tall, dark-skinned boy stepped out of the crowd until he stood right next to Nick.
"What are you talking about, Siggy?"
the leader asked him.
"His name's Frypan,"
someone called out.
"You're the only one who doesn't call him that."
A few snickers broke out, which couldn't have been more incongruous to the situation, given the boy writhing in agony at their feet. Nick ignored everyone, though Thomas noticed Albie throw around a few harsh looks.
"It was in the bottom of a cardboard box," Siggy, Frypan, whatever his name was, said. "Some kind of syringe had the word serum printed on it. I figured it was a mistake. Somebody had accidentally dropped it in there, whatever. Threw it out with the sausage leftovers this morning."
Albie stepped up to the boy and grabbed him by the shirt, pulled him close.
"You threw it out? Didn't bother telling anybody? No wonder you want to cook. Ain't got brains for nothing else."
Siggy smiled.
"If that makes you feel smarter. Anyway, I'm telling you now, aren't I?
Slim it."
"Where'd you throw it away?"
Nick asked.
"Maybe it's not broken. Let's at least take a look at it."
"Be right back."
Siggy jogged off toward the homestead. It only took 3 or 4 minutes, but by the time the tall boy returned with a slender metallic cylinder gripped in his hand, George had plummeted from bad to worse. More like from worse to worst. He'd gone still except for his chest, which moved rapidly as he gasped for air. His jaw had gone slack, his limbs loose, his muscles relaxed from their clenched state form earlier. The boy wasn't long for this world.
"Wicked won't let him die, right?"
Chuck asked.
"This is just some kind of test. They want to see how everyone reacts."
Teresa reached around Thomas and patted Chuck on the back.
"That's what the syringe is for. I'm sure of it. They just better hurry."
She looked at Thomas, spoke to his mind.
"This is not going to end well."
He gave a slight shake of the head, then returned his attention to the screen. Siggy had given the syringe to Nick, who now knelt by George's side. The sick boy, the stung boy, hardly moved at all now, barely breathing. His eyes looked empty of life.
"Anyone know how to do this?" Nick called out. "Where to stick it?"
"Anywhere,"
Albie yelled.
"Just hurry and do it. Look at him."
No one else even bothered replying, so Nick took the syringe, braced his thumb against it, then stabbed it into George's arm. The boy didn't even flinch. Nick pressed the plunger down until all the fluid was gone. Then he dropped it on the ground, stood up, and took a couple of steps back. Everyone gave George some space, but stayed close to watch what might happen, cutting off Thomas's view of the body.
"Come on, Georgie,"
Nick said, barely loud enough to hear. That and the rustling of a soft breeze were the only sounds in the glade. A long moment passed. Teresa squeezed Thomas's knee, her hand warm through his jeans. She was as nervous as he was. Then the boys parted, scrambling backward, and an inhuman roar filled the air. George was on his feet, his mouth open, his face stretched in a painful grimace. He shouted in a strained voice,
"Griever! It was a damn Griever! They'll kill us all!"
The words came out of him like the percussion of distant explosions. He suddenly ran at the boy closest to him, jumped on the kid, started pounding on him. Thomas watched in total shock, barely able to believe what he was seeing. Albie and Nick tried to pull George off the boy, but he swatted them away, lunging at Nick with his teeth bared.
"What the—"
Teresa whispered. George clawed at the boy, drawing blood on his cheeks, on his mouth. Now he went for the eyes, screaming the whole while. The kid under him fought back, screaming as he tried to twist his body out from under his attacker. But George seemed to have the strength of 10 men. He pressed his victim down with one hand and punched him in the face. Then he went for the boy's eyes again, howling like an animal. It was insanity, as if George had gone from the flu to a full-fledged crank in a matter of minutes. Other kids stepped in, tried to pull him off, but no one could get a hold of any part of his wildly thrashing body. Thomas saw movement come in from the right, saw that it was Albie, running at full speed. At some point, he'd left the scene, and now he returned at a charge. In his hands, held up next to his shoulders, as if he were a seasoned warrior of ancient days, he held a long, thin shaft of wood. It appeared to be a broken broom or shovel handle, its end a splintery, sharp point.
"Get out of the way!"
Albie yelled, his feet thundering across the dusty ground. Thomas looked back at George, saw that his hands were digging into his victim's eye sockets, the kid screaming in pain. Albie reached him and thrust the makeshift spear into the back of George's neck with enough force that it burst through to the other side. George's cries turned into choking gargles as his body fell to the side. The kid scrambled out from under him, his hands covering his injured face. George twitched, moaned, then went still. Blood darkened the dirt and stone below him. Chapter 40 2:30.3:15 5:52 p.m.
"Holy crap!"
Thomas breathed, as stunned as he'd ever been. Teresa let go of Thomas's leg and slumped back into her chair with a loud release of breath.
"Holy crap is right! What's going on?"
Thomas looked over at Chuck and felt his heart break a little. The boy had curled his legs up into his seat and wrapped his arms around them, his face pale, two clear lines of tears glistening down his cheeks. He was trembling. An unbearable guilt swarmed around Thomas's heart. He'd never expected his friend to see something so awful. He'd never expected to see something so awful himself.
Hey,
Thomas said, turning to face Chuck. He gripped the boy's shoulders.
"Hey, look at me.
Chuck finally did, eyes filled with sadness.
"We'll figure this out, okay?"
Thomas said.
"I'm sure that... I don't know. Something went wrong. Someone screwed up. It wasn't meant to happen. This isn't how the maze will be, okay?"
Chuck spoke through a lurch of a sob.
"I was just having fun. I didn't..."
His voice cracked, and he kept crying, quietly.
"I know, man. I know. That was tough to watch."
He pulled Chuck into his arms. Teresa was already there, embracing him from the other side. Their little group hug went on for a minute or so. Then Thomas looked over his shoulder to see how the gladers were reacting to the violent death. Some of the boys had dispersed, most of them wandering off alone. Albie was on his knees, leaning against the wooden spear he'd used to kill George, staring at the ground, completely still. Newt was near him, sitting cross-legged in the dirt, head in his hands, eyes closed, as miserable as a person could look. A beetle blade had skittered closer to George's body, and Thomas put that view in the center display. Of all the kids present, Nick seemed to have held it together better than anyone, even though George had obviously been a close friend. He'd called him Georgie, after all. Nick knelt next to his dead companion, rummaging through his clothes, looking into his eyes, studying his limbs. He suddenly froze, his eyes focused on a spot in the middle of George's back. After a second or two, he reached out and grabbed the dead boy's shirt, fingered it until he found a small rip. Then, with several quick jerks of his arm, he tore a larger hole and leaned in to stare at something. Thomas leaned in, too, in the observation room, focusing on the big screen in front of him. The beetle blade moved in closer until it was right next to the body, its view pointing at the very spot that had interested Nick. The skin there was red and swollen, and several thick black veins sprouted out of a wound, an almost perfect circle of darkness cut into George's flesh. It looked like the body of a spider, with broken legs coming from its body. The vicious wound was hard to look at for too long.
"Stung," Teresa said. "That looks like one hell of a sting to me."
Thomas stood up.
"That's it," he said. "Come on."
He turned away from the hideous display projected onto the wall and headed for the door.
"Where are we going?"
Teresa asked, right by his side. Thomas turned to Chuck, who was close behind them.
"Actually, you need to stay here. I mean, I need you to stay here."
"What? Why?"
He was either offended or terrified to be left alone. Thomas couldn't tell.
"Someone needs to keep an eye on those monitors for me. If anything happens, if a griever comes out, or if someone gets stung, or the whole place explodes, anything, you come find me. Okay?"
Thomas knew that Chuck was too smart to buy his explanation for leaving him behind, but he accepted it without putting up a fight.
"Fine. But where are you going? How will I find you?"
Thomas opened the door and waved Teresa through.
"I'm going to get some answers."
Thomas banged on the door.
"Let us in!" he yelled.
The main command room was off limits to anyone younger than 21. He'd heard someone say that once, but it sounded like a formality invented to keep them out. He, Teresa, Eris, and Rachel were part of the team when it was convenient. He knew they were all being analyzed just as much as anyone in the Glade. And after what he'd just seen, Thomas was beginning to feel very uncomfortable about things. He was about to pound on the door again when there was a click followed by a hiss. Then the big metal slab swung open. A man he'd never seen before stood there, short and stocky with dark hair. And he looked none too pleased.
"What's the problem, Thomas?" the man asked in a surprisingly calm voice. "Things are a little crazy in here right now."
"You keep saying we're important, that we're a part of all this," Thomas said.
He pointed at Teresa, then himself.
"We helped program your maze, and helped send all our friends there. And now we just watched one of them die, and you did nothing to stop it. Why? Why didn't you guys go in and help? Someone needs to explain what happened, and someone's going to do it right now."
Thomas was shaking, trying to hold himself together. He sucked in a quaking breath, waiting for the man to answer. Several emotions passed across the man's face. The last was anger.
"Hold on,"
he said, then closed the door without waiting for a response. Thomas reached out to bang on the door again, but Teresa grabbed him, shook her head.
"They'll talk to us," she said in his head. "Just show a little patience. We have to act as calm as they do in these situations if we're ever going to get anywhere."
Chagrined, annoyed that she was right, feeling stupid over his ridiculous act of bravado, he let out another breath and nodded. Then waited. The door opened less than a minute later. Dr. Levitt stood there, as bald and unhappy as always, but before he could say anything, Dr. Page appeared at his side. She practically pushed the man out of the way.
"Thomas," she said kindly, "Teresa, I'm sure you must be as concerned as we are."
He hadn't expected those to be her first words to them, although he couldn't say why they struck him as strange.
"Well, yeah, we are," Teresa replied.
You guys are okay with killing kids now?
Thomas didn't know if he would have been brave enough to say it so bluntly, but he agreed. However it had happened, Wicked had just murdered George, a kid who wasn't even 18. Dr. Page stepped to the side, opening the door wider.
Come in. We'll explain to you what happened, what went wrong. You deserve to know.
Yeah, I think we do,
Thomas heard himself say, though he was a little lost at the moment. He'd been struck by a realization that had never felt truer. It didn't matter what they did or what they said. Anything and everything could be a test set up by Wicked.
It was too much.
He followed Teresa into the command room, suddenly wary of his surroundings.
Follow me,
Dr. Page said, letting the door swing shut. Levitt still stood to the side, eyeing both Thomas and Teresa when they moved past him, as if they were enemy invaders. After walking down a short, narrow hallway, they entered a vast room that opened to both sides. To Thomas's right was an array of monitors, workstations, control desks, and chairs. It looked like their own observation room on steroids, at least 10 times bigger. 20 people or so went about various duties in the huge space. To Thomas's left were several desks, a glass-enclosed meeting room, and a few closed doors, hiding who knew what mysteries. It made Thomas remember that he really only saw a tiny piece of Wicked's vast operation.
I don't want anyone else talking to you about this right now, Dr. Page said over her shoulder as she walked through the middle of all the activity. Let's find a quiet spot, and I'll explain to you what's happened. I wish you trusted us, trusted me, a little more than you've shown just now. Maybe give us the benefit of the doubt.
Benefit of the doubt?
Thomas repeated, surprised by her reaction. Could she really expect that of them, after what they'd just seen? The doctor came to a small, glassed-in room with a table and 4 chairs at its center. She opened the door and ushered them in, gesturing for them to sit. Thomas didn't like how this was going. He'd wanted to stomp in there demanding answers, and now somehow they were on Wicked's terms again.
We didn't come for a nice sit-down, he said. We don't want lies. We want actual answers. Please.
You killed someone,
Teresa added, in a much calmer voice.
We didn't sign up for this. We didn't sign up for you killing our friends. Are we next?
Dr. Page didn't look angry, or guilty, or even embarrassed. Instead, she seemed sad. Distressed.
Are you finished?
She asked, her voice tired.
Can I please talk now? You're sick of lies and half-truths? So am I.
But you came here for answers, and all you're doing is making accusations.
That has to stop if you want me to talk.
Thomas sighed. It seemed they always ended up treating him like a child, and there was nothing he could do about it. Most annoying, he was still a child in their eyes, though he sure didn't feel like one.
Fine, Teresa had said while he stewed. Then talk.
Dr. Page gave a slow nod of acknowledgement.
Thank you. Now, here's the truth. We mutated a version of the flare virus that can take hold in the immune in interesting ways. Ways that will help us understand the main virus better. That altered version is what the griever injected George with, and it's also what the serum is for, to stop its effects. Sadly, the serum hasn't been perfected yet, and you saw the unfortunate result.
She paused a moment, eyeing Thomas for a reaction. Thomas was too shocked by her candidness to gather his thoughts. Teresa stayed silent as well. Dr. Page folded her arms.
We'll keep working on it. We didn't mean for George to die. That's the honest truth. We'll correct the serum.
She paused to take a breath before continuing.
But I can tell you this.
We measured some very significant results in the hours after he was stung. Results that we need and will continue to need. Not just from George, but from everyone who saw what happened and reacted to it. She stood up, then put her hands on the table and leaned toward them.
And that's what matters.
She walked toward the door and opened it, then looked back at them.
I've grown to love the both of you, like my own children. I swear to you that nothing on this earth could be more true.
She paused, on the verge of choking up.
And I'll do anything, anything, to make sure that you have a world to return to someday.
She looked down, a shimmering tear perilously close to dripping from her eye. Then stepped out and closed the door. Chapter 41 2:30.4.8 7:15 p.m. Thomas ate dinner quickly. He had the observation room scheduled for the entire evening, and he didn't want to waste a single minute of his available time. It was the closest he could get to actually being with all those friends he missed so much. He wolfed down his last few bites of food, then ran until he got there. He sat down, made sure all the monitors were up and running, did a quick scan of the controls and the different perspectives up on the screens. Then Thomas leaned forward, and he watched. Minho and Newt had been partners today, runners out in the maze. He watched them come in through the east door, headed for the hulking turtle of a building they'd transformed into a map room of sorts. They'd requested old-school paper and pencils by leaving a message in the box after it delivered its weekly supplies, and their request had been granted. They didn't stop jogging until they'd reached the menacing door of the concrete block building. It had always had a locking wheel handle, like something you'd see on a submarine, which is why they'd chosen it to store the maps they drew. Minho inserted a key, then spun the wheel until something clicked and the door popped open. The two of them went inside, the first runners to arrive back home. A beetle blade followed them in, and Thomas switched that view and audio to the main display. As Minho grabbed pieces of paper for them, both boys were chanting words under their breath. It sounded like they were saying, "Left, left, right, left, right, right, right," and "Two-fisted rock, then three rights," and "Rainbow crack, left, bald ivy spot, left, right, right." They wrote furiously on their respective papers, recording their words before they forgot. "Phew," Minho said, dropping his pencil. He stretched his arms up over his head and yawned.
"Sweet run today."
"Not too shabby," Newt muttered, grinning to himself. Then they grabbed new pieces of paper and started turning their words into a visual map. Albie sat on the bench by a flagpole alone. Night had fallen and the doors had long since closed. An empty plate sat next to him. Crumbs dotted his shirt. His eyes were closed. His body was perfectly still.
"Albie?"
someone said, walking up to him.
"Shh,"
Albie hissed.
"Leave me alone. I want to listen."
"Fine."
But the kid stayed close, closing his eyes like Albie. Outside the huge enclosure of their home, the walls of the maze began their process of changing positions. The ground trembled, and the distant roar of stone against stone filled the air. Albie had something close to a smile on his face.
"Thunder,"
he whispered.
"What?"
his visitor asked.
"Thunder. I remember thunder."
A tear trickled its way down his cheek. He didn't wipe it away. Thomas sat in his chair, silent and sullen, as Dr. Page worked on measuring his vitals. He had a full load of classes today, and he dreaded it with a heaviness that made him want to cry.
"You're quiet this morning," the doctor said.
"I need to be," he replied. "Please. Today,
I need to be quiet.
She whispered her response.
Okay.
Thomas pictured his friends going about their various activities in the glade, tried to imagine what they were doing that very second, and he thought about something he'd been thinking for a while. Someday he should probably join them there. It would be the right thing to do. Dr. Page stuck a needle in him, and this time he felt it. Thomas went along in his weird, boring, sometimes heartbreaking, sometimes uplifting life, watching his friends tough it out inside the glade and the maze, but also watching them prosper, work hard to make it a better place. Rules were established, jobs assigned, routines worked out. The homestead was 3 times bigger than when they'd started, and Minho had been named Keeper of the Runners. All these things and much more happened as the days turned into weeks, turned into months. Teresa and Chuck were his constant companions, and he loved having them around. They made his life bearable, even fun at times. But it was hard to get too flippant when the place where you lived constantly reminded you of 2 things. Your friends were in an experiment, and that experiment existed because an awful, hideous disease rampaged in the outside world. And so, he lived, day in, day out, getting his body monitored, attending classes, doing as he was asked, like helping Teresa prep the new boy each month for insertion. The basement, where he'd made so many fond memories, was now a place he visited only once a month. It seemed darker and danker than it ever had before. He did whatever he could to find time for the observation room, taking his own notes on what he saw, sharing those with Dr. Page. The better the analysis, the more sessions he got. Mostly, it was a life of boredom interrupted by sweet times with Teresa and Chuck, made tolerable by the ever-increasing kindness of Dr. Page, who seemed to be the only member of Wicked with a heart, the only one who remembered what it was like to be a kid. She didn't shy away from repeating what she'd said that day, about loving them like her own children. But it was always laced with a sense of danger, as if she knew on some level that letting herself feel that way might be the biggest risk she'd ever take. It was a strange world, but Thomas was alive, and he lived. Chapter 42 2:30.8.21 10:32 a.m. His crazy day started with a knock on his door during a morning break. When he opened it, a boy he'd never seen before stood there, with Randall, of all people, right next to him. The man had been scarce lately. In fact, Thomas was pretty sure he hadn't seen him since the day George had died. And he didn't look so good. He was thinner than before, and his complexion looked gray. As for the new boy, he was a touch taller than Thomas, with blonde hair, and his eyes were as wide and curious as a baby's.
"This is Ben," Randall said. "He's one of the new subjects we picked up the last few days, and he's the perfect age for insertion. Dr. Page wants you to prep him before you run through your daily checkups and tests."
Randall turned away without waiting for a response, walking quickly down the hallway as if late for an appointment. Poor Ben stood there, blinking nervously.
"Don't worry about that guy," Thomas said, opening his door wider. "He's always been a weirdo. Come on in. Believe it or not, I can remember what it feels like to be brand new here."
"Thanks."
Ben entered the room timidly and sat down at the desk when Thomas motioned to the chair.
"They found me in Denver."
And then the kid transformed in an instant, bursting into tears. He put his hands over his face, and his shoulders lurched with each sob. Denver? Thomas had studied plenty about the city, how it was a safe zone, a gathering place for those who didn't have the flare. They evidently had put extreme precautions in place to make sure no infected ever entered, and it was surrounded by heavily fortified walls. The fact that Ben came from there struck Thomas as odd. Didn't this mean that his parents had been healthy? And yet, Wicked had taken him away? Thomas realized the boy was still crying.
What happened?
He asked, not sure how to act.
I mean, take your time, but I'm here to listen.
He almost rolled his eyes at the lame choice of words.
We'd finally found a place to live,
Ben said through his tears.
Somewhere nice. And neither one of my parents had the flair. I know it. They wouldn't have let us in if they did.
It was all coming out in a flood now, his tears evaporating into anger.
They asked if I would join their study, and my dad said no, and they grabbed me and took me away. They pushed my mom down and threatened to shoot my dad. Who are these people? Why am I here?
Thomas sat on his bed, frozen. He had absolutely no idea what to say. He'd always wondered about everyone's parents, and it seemed like his suspicions had been true. Wicked said they all came from families with two sick parents and no other care available. Was this some anomaly, or one of many lies? Ben started crying again, burying his head in his arms on the desk.
I'm sorry, man,
Thomas said, feeling the boy's sadness deep within himself.
They're trying to find a cure for the flare, and they're desperate.
That was all he had. He didn't have the heart or words to try anything else.
But hey, things aren't so bad. I promise.
Ben picked up his head, wiped his tears, then nodded.
Come on, let me show you around.
Thomas stood up and walked to the door, opened it, and escorted Ben into the hallway, calling himself a big fat liar the whole time. After giving Ben a tour of the complex, Thomas sat with the new kid in the observation room, introducing him to the maze. He didn't have the heart to come right out and say that he'd be sent in shortly, not after the tearful display earlier, but he was sure the kid wasn't stupid. He tried to keep it positive.
Most of the guys love it, sleeping in the outdoors with their friends.
It wasn't lost on Thomas that here he was, telling lies as easily as Wicked seemed to. It bothered him, but he didn't know what else to do. He wanted the boy to feel better. His thoughts fizzled away as something developed on the right side of the main display. On one of the screens, a beetle blade was following Gally, who kept looking over his shoulder as if he were up to no good.
Uh-oh,
he whispered, placing the view of Gally on the huge screen in the middle.
What's wrong?
Ben asked. For a few seconds, Thomas had completely forgotten that Ben existed, much less that he was sitting right next to him.
Nothing, Thomas answered absently. Just, I want to see where my friend is going.
Worried something bad might happen to traumatize Ben on one of his first days, he quickly escorted him into the hallway. He made him stand several feet from the door.
Listen, wait here, okay? I'm going to call a friend over to finish up your tour. It was great to meet you.
Okay, the boy said, obviously feeling stupid. Thomas felt bad, but rushed back into the room, leaving the door open a crack so he'd hear when Teresa arrived. He found his seat again. Gally had made it all the way to the south door and was just now turning back toward the glade, searching the area, obviously wondering if anyone was watching him. Evidently, he didn't care about the beetle blades, just the other boys. Looking confident that he hadn't been noticed, he focused his attention on the left side of the enormous door itself, the row of protruding spikes towering above him.
"What are you up to?" Thomas whispered. "Come on, you stupid beetle blade. Give me a better angle."
As if the little mechanical creature had heard him, it scurried faster, crawling next to Gally along the wall. Then it turned around and scuttled backward so that any observers could clearly see the boy's face. He was crying, his cheeks so wet it had obviously been going on for a while. Thomas didn't understand that at all. What was he doing sneaking around forbidden territory? Not being a runner, he wasn't allowed in the maze itself, and he looked intent on entering it. Thomas suddenly remembered Ben, waiting out in the hallway.
"Hey, you there?"
Thomas immediately called out to Teresa. Then he turned down the volume so Ben couldn't hear what was going on.
"Come get this new kid out of my hair. His name's Ben, and he's just outside the observation room. Gally is up to something weird."
"Okay," was her simple response. Gally had just broken the rules and stepped around the edge of the door. He was now officially outside the glade. He closed his eyes, started taking deep breaths. A strange smile spread across his face. His arms came up from his body, sticking out at his sides, as if he were imagining that he could fly. And suddenly Thomas understood. Gally had stepped outside the glade just for the rush of it. Then the display screen erupted in a blur of movement. Thomas sucked in a breath of air when a Greaver appeared out of nowhere, its grisly, wet skin suddenly filling the screen, Gally covered by its body. There was an inhuman moan and a surge of machinery. The beetle blade bolted. Its camera now showed nothing but vines and stone, all of it shaky. But Thomas heard Gally scream, and it wasn't a scream of fear. It was a scream of pain. The camera view tilted back into place, and the Greaver had disappeared. Gally clutched at his side with one hand, pulled himself along the ground with the other. It took a few agonizing seconds, but he finally got himself back into the glade proper. Boys were running toward him. One named Clint was at the front of the pack, hauling a first aid kit. Wicked had finally figured out the proper dosage for the serum, and Clint held a syringe in his free hand as he ran. Gally's screams were something Thomas thought he'd never be able to forget. He heard a gasp behind him and spun around to see Ben peeking through the narrow gap of the open door. The boy's eyes had widened in horror.
"What just happened?"
he asked in a timid voice. Thomas fumbled for words.
"Oh, that? Sometimes they do these drills, test their response times. Nothing to worry about."
He didn't fail to realize he'd just used one of Dr. Levitt's favorite phrases. Teresa arrived just then to whisk Ben away.
"Poor kid," Thomas thought.
Chapter 43 2:30:12:17 9:06 p.m. Thomas waited patiently for Dr. Page to come back after taking his latest blood sample to the lab. In a rare occurrence, there was no one else in the room with him, not even an assistant. After a couple of silent minutes, he got curious. He got up from his chair and went over to the counter. He opened a few doors, pulled out a few drawers. Nothing looked too out of the ordinary. Vials, syringes, paper-wrapped products. But then, in the last drawer to the right, he found an absolute gold mine. A research tablet. The thin, foot-long rectangular device had a shiny gray screen ready to reveal a world of information. He knew he'd probably need passwords, but this was an opportunity that might never present itself again. Refusing to consider the consequences, he tucked the device into the back waist of his pants, flopping his shirt over the remaining portion to hide it. He was in his seat well before Dr. Page returned. That evening, he told an orderly he was feeling a little under the weather and wanted to bypass his usual session in the observation room. No one made too much of a fuss about it. He wanted to dive into his pilfered research tablet. He'd also grabbed a few snacks in the cafeteria to make it a full night of entertainment. Sitting at his desk, no one around to bother him, munching on potato chips, he powered up the tablet and got to work. He hadn't told Teresa about it yet. He wasn't going to take the slightest chance of someone taking his treasure away from him before he at least had one shot at it. To his great disappointment, and just as he'd suspected, most of the information portals on the device required passwords, and he could forget about remotely accessing the main Wicked systems. But there were enough things in plain sight to keep his attention, all filed in an open-access tab labeled History. He dug through the documents, memorizing as much as he could. He learned the original names of his friends, laughing at some of them. Siggy, a.k.a. Frypan, had been named Toby by his parents.
Toby.
Thomas didn't know why that struck him as so funny. There was other interesting information. Schematics on the Wicked Complex and its various buildings. An early military report on what would become the Grievers. Climate data going back to the year of the sun flares, as well as comparative charts to the averages before that time. Tons of information on the flare, its symptoms, stages, prior attempts at treatment. One seemingly random remark in a memo caught his attention. Two staff members reminiscing about the time they had to tinker with poor A2's memories because his first meeting with Teresa had been such a disaster. This made Thomas stop reading. He stared down at the tablet, thinking back. He remembered the day he'd first officially met Teresa, how he'd been dizzy with déjà vu. Had Wicked been experimenting with their implants and memories that long ago? It made sense, in light of what they did to his friends when they sent them into the maze, something they'd have to be well prepared for. But Thomas felt dizzy considering the possibility to think that there could be an entire meeting with Teresa that had been erased from his mind. What else might they have taken from him? The more he thought about it, the more upsetting it was, which wasn't helping anything, he told himself. So he returned to perusing the tablet for information. After a few dead ends, he saw a file labeled Deleted Com. He opened it. It was a series of memos and correspondence that he had to think had been left out of the secure area by mistake. Communication between higher-ups at Wicked and several other entities that he could only guess were predecessors of the organization. There were a lot of acronyms, some of which he recognized from his various history classes. FIRE, Flares Information Recovery Endeavor. PFC, Post-Flares Coalition. AMRID, Army Medical Research Institute for Infectious Diseases. And more he didn't recognize. He scanned them, fascinated at what it must have been like living through that time period. He stayed at it for hours, his eyes stinging from reading for so long. At a certain point, he started skimming, reading too fast to catch much of what the documents actually said. Then he stopped on something interesting. A couple of acronyms he'd never seen before, along with the words Top Secret in red letters. This just might be something. He scanned a memo or two, his heart rate picking up with each word he read. Things he couldn't believe. About a virus. About it being man-made. About it being released on purpose. About a population that had gotten too big to feed. Oh, man, he whispered, reading through the last one again. He could barely believe what it said. Post-Flares Coalition Memorandum. Date 219.2.12. Time 1932. To all board members. From Chancellor John Michael. Re EO draft. Please give me your thoughts on the following draft. It goes out tomorrow. Executive Order Number 13 of the Post-Flares Coalition, by recommendation of the Population Control Committee, to be considered top secret, of the highest priority, on penalty of capital punishment. We, the Coalition, hereby grant the PCC express permission to fully implement their PC Initiative Number 1, as presented in full and attached below. We, the Coalition, take full responsibility for this action, and will monitor developments and offer assistance to the fullest extent of our resources. The virus will be released in the locations recommended by the PCC and agreed upon by the Coalition. Armed forces will be stationed to ensure that the process ensues in as orderly a manner as possible. EO number 13, PCI number 1, is hereby ratified. Begin immediately.
Wow.
That was all he got from Teresa after spilling everything to her.
Yeah, he replied. Wow is right. They thought the virus would only kill a certain percentage of the population, make it more manageable. They had no idea it would mutate and become this monstrous thing that's basically wiped us out. I just can't believe all this. I can't believe it.
Teresa was quiet. She didn't even broadcast how these revelations made her feel.
The worst part, he continued, is that there are several direct links to Wicked. Like, remember John Michael, that guy we saw at the crank pits? He was the one who ordered the virus released. The past is the past, Tom.
Her words stopped him cold.
At least they're trying to fix what they screwed up, she continued. I mean, there's nothing we can do about that now. Teresa, he started to say, but then stumbled over a void.
He had no idea how to respond.
Did you already know this stuff? I'd heard rumors. And you never told me?
He was stunned. How could she have known this and never said anything?
She was his best friend.
The first person he went to with everything.
I just don't see the point. Yes, we have reason to hate these people, but how is dwelling on the past going to help anybody? The solution is what matters.
Thomas had never been so blindsided in his life.
Didn't you learn anything from our puzzle lessons with Miss Denton? To know a solution, you have to know the problem through and through. This is a problem.
The response he got from Teresa was emotionless.
Yeah, I guess you're right, she answered. I'm really tired, Tom. Can we talk about it tomorrow?
She was gone from his mind before he could respond. The next day, Teresa refused to talk about it, emphasizing that she'd rather focus on the future than the past. Dr. Page also blew it off, saying that those decisions had been made well before her time. It was almost like they were both determined to forget. Thomas wouldn't forget. He swore to himself that he'd always remember this. That he'd always remember that Wicked was trying to fix a problem their predecessors had created in the first place. Chapter 44 231.5.4 10:14 p.m. Winter came in spurts that year, like old engines being restarted after years of sitting in the maintenance heap. But it finally settled in, lasting long past what should have been the onset of spring. Thomas didn't venture outside very often, and then only by special permission and with at least two armed guards by his side. But he saw enough to know that ice, cold, and snow had returned to the world with a vengeance. The resident Wicked climatologist said that weather patterns were slowly resuming their cycles on Earth, winter, spring, summer, and fall, but that in places farthest north and south of the equator, the seasons were far more unpredictable and extreme than they'd been before the sun flares. He described the world's climate as a pendulum that now swung faster and farther in both directions. Thomas enjoyed it when he could, enjoyed the feel of snow on his face, the tingle of icy cold on his nose and fingertips. It felt like a way of spitting in the sun flare's face.
See? I'm cold. Now go suck it.
In early May, winter still refusing to loosen its grip, Thomas took a walk outside with Chuck and Teresa, two of the guards right behind them, weapons out. Thomas was in a sour mood. Everything about Wicked had worn him to the bone, hardened his heart. The psychs, the variables, the kill zone, the patterns. Everything. He felt that way ever since the night he'd discovered the truth about their predecessors, that they'd unleashed the very virus to which they wanted to find a cure. Going outside for a while was a tiny escape. Teresa shivered and rubbed her arms through her coat.
Are we sure this is planet Earth? Wicked didn't throw us through a flat trans, put us on an ice planet? That'd be cool, Chuck replied. Ice aliens! I wonder if your tongue sticks to their skin when you lick them. You know, like a flagpole?
Thomas tousled his friend's curly hair, trying to put his bad feelings aside.
Yeah, we know, Chuck. You don't always have to explain your jokes to us. Sometimes they're actually funny.
Like that one. It was funny. I'm laughing so hard it hurts on the inside.
Me too, Teresa added. I'm snorting. I'm giggling so hard on the inside.
Chuck oinked like a pig and giggled. He often reacted to things like that. It only made him more likable.